I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
And a Janovic.
The mayor of Salt Lake City, Erin Mendenhall, holding a news conference right now regarding her school mask mandate. We've got KSL News Radio's Paul Nelson covering that news conference. They're trying to determine if she intends to continue the mask mandate in schools, Dave, in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are just kind of confused what is mandated, what schools are involved. And you heard, as we were listening just during the break, we heard from the mayor, and she said that she's recommending they continue wearing masks in schools, but also in social gatherings, outside in social gatherings, and to see if there is any change in what the mayor has already mandated.
Right now, we're going to talk about this mystery of a 22-year-old woman. Her name is Gabby Petito. She's from New York. She's not from Utah, but apparently at some point she travels through Utah a couple of weeks ago and then leaves the state with her boyfriend in a van, according to what we know so far. And then at some point along their journey, Gabby disappears. So authorities here are involved in the investigation to some extent. We want to get Garna Mejia on the line with us now live for KSL Television. She's been covering this story. She spoke to the parents of Gabby. And Garna, what do we know about this? It seems so strange that she made it from New York to Utah and then vanished.
Yeah, good morning, you guys. And I mean, I think that's the way to put it, is this is a strange case, and there's still a lot of unanswered questions and a lot of information that police are keeping close to their vest. So this is being handled by the Suffolk County Police Department out in New York. They say she left New York on July 2nd. That's where her mom was, left with her boyfriend on this cross-country trip. They were going to spend time in Colorado and southern Utah. And according to their social media, her family says that they made it there. They spent time there. They were in contact with family and friends. And they kind of wanted to do this trip and document it on social media. They wanted to get a following of, you know, just living out of your van and being able to travel the country. And so sometime around August 21st, they get to Salt Lake City. They stay here for a couple days. Dad says he knows that because they were out of Wi-Fi, and so he placed an Uber Eats order for them that was delivered to them here in Salt Lake City. They check out a couple days later, make it to Grand Teton National Park by the 25th, and then she goes silent. And so her mom says, you know, the last time that would be the last time she heard from her, the last text she got from her was on the 30th. And they were supposed to be heading towards Yellowstone. They don't know if the couple ever made it there. Then, you know, 10 days go by. They're seeing no activity on her social media. They're seeing nothing. And so they start kind of looking, and they start calling friends and realize no one has heard from her. And so they start trying to see if any law enforcement agency would pick up the case. And that's where we are today, where on Saturday, authorities in New York officially started looking into this case.
Have we heard from the boyfriend? Do we know where the boyfriend is? And was he with her?
Dave, that is a really good question. And I think that's one of the biggest questions that we have right now is police are confirming that she is missing. They are confirming, however, that they found her van, but they won't tell us where her van was found. They won't tell us what happened to the boyfriend. They won't tell us if they've spoken with the boyfriend. Now, there's information that has been posted on social media that the parents say that, you know, they've been told by detectives that they can't confirm that. They can't speak about that. They're saying, you know, the van is found. We'll worry about the boyfriend later. What we want to focus on right now is finding her. She is not with the van. She never made it home.
Garnham here with KSL Television has been following the mystery of disappearance of a 22-year-old woman who left New York in early July to travel the United States in a van, went through Utah at some point, stopped here for a few days, and then after she got to the Tetons, disappeared, just seems to have vanished. And her parents are asking for help, authorities in New York now on the case. And so, Garna, my question is, how can we help? Is there a description of the van or a description of this woman? Maybe more specifics of where they hung out while they were here in Utah?
Yeah, so it seems that the family has been able to confirm that their van was spotted at Grand Teton National Park. So they feel really confident in saying she was there on the 25th. With, you know, likely this boyfriend of hers. So what they're hoping is that anyone in this, you know, Utah corridor into Grand Teton National Park, and possibly even Yellowstone, who may have seen her, who maybe was there visiting the parks and took a picture. It sounds like, you know, it's a unique van. It's a little van that they've converted to be something that they can sleep out of and cook out of. And we've got pictures on our website. She's described as being 5 feet tall, five foot five. She's a small frame, blonde hair, blue eyes, and just looks like a really, really young, happy person. They've got information on her Instagram. The parents have started a Facebook page, Find Gabby. And so you can go and find that information. But right now they're really focusing on, if you see somebody that fits her description, something that's really important too is that she has a tattoo on her arm that says, "Let it be." So it's a very distinct tattoo. If anybody recognizes her, to approach her and call police, or if you have any pictures from those parks where she may have, you know, appeared, if you can reach out and let them know.
Now, Garna, when I first heard this story, I started thinking, you know, this van camping, the overlanding, it's sometimes called, has become very popular, and very popular in just the last year or so during COVID, where people just live out of their van and they kind of do this off the grid experience. But as soon as you said the van has been found and she's not in it, that changes, I think, the entire dynamic. So it doesn't sound like, oh, she just wanted to get away. Because, again, they found the van. It sounds like they wanted to kind of do this travel as a social media experiment or to get notoriety, whatever it might be. It everything points to foul play.
I mean, unfortunately, I think that's kind of the fear. And so you're absolutely right, Dave. There has been, according to her parents and what we have found on social media, no activity from her. The parents say that they're pretty sure after August 27th, she went silent on social media. And that was the whole point of part of documenting this trip, was just like you said, gaining a following and seeing if they can go visit other places. So she was also, her mom says, in constant contact. Mom and dad are separated. Dad lives in Florida. Mom lives in New York. She would contact both of her parents, but she was really in really regular contact with her mom. So when she stopped answering text messages, the mom says that after August 25th, you know, through August 30th, she's not even sure if the text messages she was getting were from her. She says she has her reservations about that. And there's just a lot of questions, but behavior that her parents and family and friends are saying at this time that is just highly irregular.
Garna Mejia of KSL Television, we know you're going to continue to track that story closely. The disappearance of Gabby Petito, or Petito, did I say that last name right? Petito?
Petito, yes.
Petito of New York made the cross-country trek to Utah, went into the Grand Teton National Park, and then was apparently on her way to Yellowstone National Park in a Ford van, a 2012 white Ford van, and she somehow just vanished. And her parents are begging for any information to be reported to the police department in Suffolk County, New York. I'm sure if you called any police department and told them you had information on this white van or information that you've spotted Gabby at some point, that they would take your call. But I'm looking at this Find Gabby Facebook page right now, Dave, that Garna just talked to us about. And she's blonde, smiling. In this photo, she's wearing a pink shirt, and another photo, she's got her sunglasses on top of her head. And yeah, 22 years old, blonde, blue eyes, 5'5", somehow vanished after she made the trek through Utah. This is every parent's worst nightmare, Dave.
Yes, and it's gaining popularity, this traveling across the country in a van. So this is something that my daughter, she wants to do this. She wants to get a van. She wants to fix it up. She wants to travel. And this has always been my worry, is you lose contact. We don't know where you are and what could happen. We don't know, but it seems suspicious. You know, it doesn't really feel like a publicity stunt. It seems like something has happened, and that's what's scary.
Straight ahead, again, continuing to track that news conference that Mayor Mendenhall just held, trying to find out if she will continue to extend the mask mandate in Salt Lake City schools. We're going to get word in a moment from KSL News Radio's Paul Nelson, who's live at the news conference. Also, we've got this crazy story that's been unfolding over the weekend of this altercation at a kids' soccer game right here in Utah, where spectators and kids fled because someone brought a gun. Lindsay Ayrt has been tracking that story and going to tell us why somebody brought a gun to a soccer game. I want to get you an update right now on Mayor Mendenhall's press conference that wrapped up moments ago regarding a mask mandate in Salt Lake City's public schools.
Paul Nelson joins us right now. Paul, was there anything crazy that happened? What did she have to say?
Nothing crazy per se, but she did kind of double down, we should say, and just kind of reiterate her claims as to why a mask mandate would work. She pointed out to data about vaccination rates in Salt Lake County, and she pointed to words of Dr. Antipravia from University Health, who says that the biggest reason why there is such an increase in the amount of kids who have the Delta variant is mostly because masks are not being mandated in schools. And so she is saying that is something that has to keep happening in Salt Lake City. She already had the mask mandate for schools already. This is one of those things where she can only keep the mandate in place for 30 days just on her own. So she has to go back to the council and they have to reapprove it. And so she used this data to kind of back up her message of this is why the mask mandate is needed. We need to keep the Delta variant down, and that mask mandates, in her opinion, are the best way.
Paul, we want to let you get back to work there at City Hall, but my understanding is she's going to be recommending tomorrow at the City Council meeting that they vote to extend the mask requirement in public schools in Salt Lake City.
Yes, that is exactly what she said here. She said, I want them to reapprove the mask mandate in Salt Lake City because, in her mind, she says that is the best way to keep the Delta variant down.
Paul Nelson, KSL News Radio, thank you.
Debbie, I'm looking at the state website, the coronavirus.utah.gov, and it tracks how many cases have been in each school district. And as I look at Salt Lake School District, most of the active cases or the active case total is under 5 for just about every school, whether it's a high school in Salt Lake City, in the Salt Lake School District. So we're talking West High only has 6 active cases, 7 total for the year. But East High School is under 5 cases. If you compare that with, say, Davis School District, which has many schools that are at least over 5 and 10, 15 cases, you can see a very distinct difference between the schools that have mask mandates and schools that do not.
We're going to continue to follow this development here at KSL News Radio. Of course, the City Council expected to weigh in Salt Lake City tomorrow on the mayor's ask to extend the mask mandate in Salt Lake City. I want to make a note of that. Salt Lake City public schools for another extended period of time. Again, following that with KSL News Radio's Paul Nilsson. Thanks so much, Paul, for jumping on the line with us. Turning now to Lindsay Ertz, also of KSL News Radio. Good morning, Lindsay. You are tracking a wild story that happened in Salt Lake City this week at a soccer game where a bunch of people wound up fleeing the soccer field because someone brought a gun.
Well,
what do you know?
This wasn't actually a soccer game per se as much as it was a tournament with about 8 teams in place,
wow.
Debbie.
Okay.
So you can imagine there's hundreds of people at the Regional Athletic Complex in Rose Park. And apparently, according to witnesses, there was a dispute, and this is according, police have not confirmed this yet. I want to be very clear about that. The police haven't confirmed what happened here, but witnesses are saying there was a dispute between two spectators on the same team. And one of those spectators brandished a gun, and that just caused everyone to panic. And then so people who aren't near this thing must have heard gun, flee, and then they assumed active shooter, and so everyone flees. And I talked to one witness. Her name is Erin Shepherd, and here's how she described what happened.
Let me find that. Here we go.
And one of the defenders just yelled, active shooter, run, run. And so, I mean, everybody, no one saw a shooter or heard a shooter, but everybody just started running crazy and, you know, screaming for their kids and trying to find their kids.
So then they get to the south side of this complex and there's a fence there. And we have a picture at KSLNewsRadio.com of parents and pushing their kids over the fence, jumping the fence, scaling the fence to try to get outside the complex. And then they just run into people's houses that are on the south side of this complex. And there was about four different just people who live on the south side of this complex who let these 60 teams into their homes to kind of shelter
wow.
in place, if you will, because they thought there was an active gun situation.
Which makes total sense, right? If you hear active shooter, I'm not looking for any confirmation. I'm out of there.
Well, and this is a youth soccer tournament, right? So these kids have grown up in an era where we have active shooter situations.
But there was no good way out.
It doesn't sound like it. Yeah, and that was one of the complaints I heard from witnesses is they sort of felt like sitting ducks in this complex.
I'm looking at that photo. KSL News Radio's Lindsay Ertz referred to it as at KSLNewsRadio.com, and it is a showstopper. My heart just flew out of my chest when I see these parents and these kids trying to scale what looks to be an 8-foot-tall chain link fence. And some people on the other side trying to help folks get over and kids get over the fence. That must have been all out panic there, Lynn.
Yeah, and that's really how witnesses are describing it to me. And so the details on what the situation was are still fuzzy with the gun situation. However, the panic that ensued is really kind of the story here of how people were just fleeing and running. And what one witness told me, this was at a time when all the teams were changing. And so all the teams were on the field at one time. So there was just a massive amount of people out here.
And obviously here in Utah, we have a lot of weapons, more than 75,000 registered weapons here in Utah. But brandishing a weapon, which is taking it out in a threatening manner, that is a Class A misdemeanor. So this is a very serious crime, and you can see why, because this was a chain reaction. Somebody gets in an argument, they brandish the weapon, and then it essentially starts a stampede of families and children trying to run away from the scene.
That's a great point, Dave. I also want to point out we don't exactly know why this person brandished a weapon. Was it in self-defense? Was it in a confrontation? Were they upset about a score? Were they mad their kid wasn't playing? Or were they just fighting with somebody they knew on the sidelines?
And someone on Twitter mentioned that this could have even been a domestic dispute. So again, these details are ones we don't have yet because police have not confirmed them for us, but these are just all witness accounts that are sort of saying this, and so we are trying to figure out exactly what happened between the altercation.
What are you looking to find out from police today, Lynn?
Well, I especially want to know that I saw a Twitter thread where someone said that this parent had a restraining order against him. He was not supposed to be around, so I want to find out if that is indeed true. And I also just want to find out the altercation between and the relationship between these two individuals to find out if they're both have something to do with one of the girls on the team and whether that was related to the dispute.
Lindsay Ertz, thank you so much for talking about this, because this is a story that has slowly unfolded over the weekend. But as you paint this picture, it's a terrifying I can't imagine. If I'm a parent there and my kids, how do you wrangle them all up and make sure you're running to safety if you think there's an active shooter? A terrifying scene at a soccer match. Thank you so much for reporting on that.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.